Welcome to the Andy Social Podcast. This is episode 192 with sports journalist Oliver Kay. But before we kick into this episode, how you doing? My name's Andy Dowling, and I host this little podcast of mine, but I also host another podcast called Self-Style, which is all about small business, self-employment, and freelancing. So if you are somebody that is in the self-employment world, you've started your own business, you're a freelancer, you've got a little bit of a side hustle happening, Self-Starter could be for you. It could be a dose of inspiration or a little bit of reassurance because, you know, getting out there on your own is not an easy thing at times. So it's good to hear other people's stories and understand that everybody that's in this game goes through similar feelings as well. But if you're somebody that wants to get into this world, Self-Starter is definitely for you. So go over to selfstarter.com.au or search for Self-Starter in your preferred podcast player. There are lots of great case studies, lots of great stories from a wide range of people in different industries, different demographics, a lot of regional Australia stuff. But in season two, which is out now, I've started to go into more metro areas and just expand on the variety of stories that I'm able to share with you all through the Self-Starter platform. So go and check it all out, selfstarter.com.au. Season two's out now. We're several episodes in. It comes out every fortnight, Monday morning, 5 a.m., and we'll be running up until the end of December. So lots of great stories to come. Please continue to share them around and really appreciate it. selfstarter.com.au. Now, when I'm not a podcast pioneer, well, probably not pioneer, that's probably not the right word, but anyway, when I'm not being a podcaster, I'm a heavy metal warrior, and I've recorded all these intros out of whack. So when you hear the outro, you're going to realize that I've had a bit of a moment. I've realized something. So I'm recording the intro after the outro. So anyway, this is how I roll today, folks. But as of today, the 1st of August is the release date of Fallen Idols. So we're here, guys. We're here. So if you're not familiar with the band, Lord, if you love a bit of old school heavy metal, in the vein of Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, Queensryche, Halloween, some harder stuff like a bit of Symphony X and newer stuff, more modern sound like Symphony X, Nevermore, shit like that. I'm struggling to describe our own band. Fantastic. Go over to lord.net.au. Our new album comes out today, the 1st of August. It should be out right now. If you're listening to this on time, you'll be able to grab it on Spotify, on Apple Music, all the streaming services. You'll be able to buy it directly from Bandcamp. So if you go to lordofficial.bandcamp.com. You should be able to buy the album digitally. You should be able to buy the CD. The first pressing, I believe, is now sold out. So sorry. I mean, you can go and check. There might be a couple of copies left, but it's pretty much sold out. So the first edition had three bonus tracks and that is completely gone now. So we've repressed without the bonus tracks. So it's just a standard edition, a global edition, and that's available to purchase right now. Get behind it, folks. If you've already got the album, you've had it for a little while, you picked it up at one of the shows on the tour, please talk about it. Do screenshots, Insta stories, Facebook stories, leave a review somewhere, you know, on your blogs, webzines, on social media, talk about it. If you know anybody that loves any form of metal, find a song on the album. Don't give them the whole album. Find a song and pass it on to them. And our goal for this album is to get it in front of as many people as possible. We want as many people to hear it as possible. Whether they like it or not is secondary. We can't control that. But what we can control or do our best to control is to get this album in front of as many people as possible. So it's the 1st of August, folks. We are here. I should be celebrating. I might celebrate. Who knows? So I might get pissed. Jeez, that's how I celebrate. So go and share it around. It's a big day for us. Please get behind. Please talk about it. It's crunch time for us. We really want to make a difference with this album. And I'm just so excited to finally be able to share everything with you guys. And for anybody that's still waiting on their pre-order packs, you'll be getting them within the next few days. They're all in transit. They've all been dispatched. People that pre-ordered the CD on its own, people that got the CD and the t-shirt together, and people that got the deluxe pack that had back patch, you know, and additional patches, the bonus karaoke CD, the t-shirt, and obviously the album itself. All that stuff is in transit. If you haven't got it already, just please be patient, but you should be able to access the digital version of the album now anyway. So it's all there available for you to enjoy. So thank you so much. Now it is that time of the episode and the week that I do a shout out. Every week I thank somebody that supports me and the podcast, and it could be in a range of different ways. It could be a review somewhere online. It's been ages since I've got a review, folks. So if you want to leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher or Facebook, Facebook's got the little recommendations thing. So you can just find the tab and anyway, You guys can work it out. Leave a review somewhere. Why not? It could be a guest recommendation. It could be shouting me a beer via the PayPal button over at andysocial.net, or it's paypal.me/andydowling, I think, maybe. I should actually work out what that URL is. Anyway, you can buy merchandise from the online store over at Bandcamp. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. It helps me. It keeps this whole thing fueled, and you'll be surprised at what actually keeps me motivated. Sometimes it's the smallest of things, a little message that comes out of nowhere that just ignites something inside me. And just when I'm about to throw in the towel and just give it up, somebody just saves the day. And I don't actually tell anybody that when I say thank you, but you'd be surprised at what people can do, the power of just a simple message or a little gesture or something to show their support for the podcast. And the fact that you guys listen to this as well is heaps for me as well. So thank you so much, everyone, that continues to do the little 1% extras. It means a hell of a lot to me. But this week is a little bit of a different shout-out. This shout-out is for Rafael Baptista. And Rafael's from Brazil. And the reason why Rafael's getting a shout-out is a previous guest on the podcast, and I can't remember what episodes, but Milton Mendoza, he is one of the promoters for Prog Power USA, a really good friend of myself and the band, and he's been a massive supporter of us. He got us over to Atlanta in 2016, where we recorded our live album, Prog Power USA, whatever the hell we called it. That's great work, Andy. And Milton's just been a massive, massive supporter of the band. Anyway, Milton was telling me they were speaking to a friend of his, Raf, in Brazil, and Raf had found Milton on his favorite podcast, and his favorite podcast was the Antisocial podcast. So small world, hey, absolutely incredible. Now, Raf is not a big metal fan, from what Milton has told me. He likes a bit of metal, but is not completely immersed in the world. I actually have no idea how you, Rafael, found this podcast, but the fact that you have found it and you love it and you've told Milton it's one of your favorite podcasts, you deserve a shout out, man. And thank you so much for your support. And just from Milton's point of view, and I just want to make sure that I just really sort of clarify this, Milton told me to call you Gordo as well, which I believe in Portuguese means fat or something along those lines. So Gordo, thank you so much for your support. We really appreciate it. And thanks to Milton for letting me know as well, because they're just these little spin outs, these little cool stories and little links that bring everyone together. So I'm really stoked that yourself, Rafael, in Brazil is enjoying this podcast and continues to do so. So please, when you hear this, find me online, reach out to me, send me a message, and I'm going to shoot you out some little goodies in the mail, because we all love getting something in the mail. So thank you so much, Rafael. Really, really appreciate it. Now, moving along, I have a page set up for all of the shit that I sell on the internet. If you go to andysocial.net/buy stuff, on that page, you will find links to all of my little different e-commerce platforms. Now, there's links to the Lord online store, which is linked to our Dominus Records store, which has all of our Lord merchandise, including the new album pre-order packs that are there. There's also web stores on our Dominus Records page for Blackened Angel, for Serenity Defiled, for From Beyond, all of the side projects for the guys in the band. My podcast is on there as well. So the podcast merchandise, the t-shirts, the patches, the USB passes that contain the first 100 episodes of the album, plug, 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 it's all there. Also, on this page, on the Buy Stuff page, I have my eBay store, which is an eclectic mix of music memorabilia, odds and ends around the house, like unwanted gifts, sorry, folks, clothes, unwanted clothes, stuff that we're getting rid of, a lot of decluttering items, lots of odds and ends. So if you want a sticky beak, you can go over there and check that out. And also, I have a Discogs page. So if you're not familiar with Discogs, it's a music marketplace that people sell and trade CDs, records, cassettes, DVDs, etc. across all sorts of different music genres. So for me, I have 1,800 plus items on Discogs, ranging from metal to punk to pop to rock to every niche subgenre. I think I've got a little bit of dance music in there, maybe. I don't know. I've got jazz, I've got blues, I've got heaps of stuff. There's lots and lots of stuff over there. I was recently in Japan back in June, and I bought a shit ton of Japanese press metal. That's all on Discogs as well, so you can go and check all that out. But if you go to andysocial.net/buy stuff, you'll be able to find the links to all of these pages on there. If you get stuck and you can't get through, please shoot me a message. I'll give you direct links to any of these pages so you can have a sticky beak. But if you hearing me crap on during this intro, thank you so much. You're a hero. If you have heard me crapping on about this and you choose to buy something via any of these platforms and you mention the podcast that you heard me talking about it, I will include some extra goodies for you in the post with your order, just as a way of saying thank you. And it's a cool little thing to know that everything connects together and people are hearing different things in different areas. So it's my little market research tactic. It is working. So thank you so much to people that are taking up this little offer, and I'm including some extra little fun things in with your orders. It means a hell of a lot to me. Now, a few little thank yous before we wrap up this little section. I have Paris from Cloisters Square. Cloisters Square. It sounds sus. Cloisters. Cloisters Square in Western Australia. Daryl from Holland Park West in Queensland. Jenna from Truganning in Victoria. Jacinda from Kings Point in New South Wales. And George from Manchester in the UK. Thank you very much, folks. Really appreciate the support. That's from purchasing anything via any of the platforms over at andysocial.net/buy stuff. Okay, enough of that. Alrighty, friends, this week's episode is with sports journalist, or should I say basketball sports journalist, Oliver Kay. I discovered Oliver on Twitter, like a lot of the guests I have on this podcast. I freaking love Twitter, by the way. And Oliver's been immersed in the basketball world for the past several years as a journalist. He writes for Basketball Victoria, for the Pick and Roll. He's previously written for the Sydney Kings. He has plans down the track to hopefully get over to the US, where the mecca of basketball is, the NBA. And we talk about that, a bit of that in this conversation. And he's just a big basketball fan. And anybody that's been listening to this podcast or knows me, knows how much of a basketball fan I am. I was one of those kids that got swept up in the 90s with the NBA and the NBL, going to games. I was living in Queensland, so I was going to Brisbane Bullet games. Amazing. Leroy Loggins, God. Oh, by the way, podcast guest. So go back and listen to that episode 90 something, maybe, or 80 something. Anyway, go back and have a look. Leroy Loggins has been on the Andy Social podcast. Get into it. Anyway, I got swept up in the 90s, the one-on-one magazines, the Beckett's, the trading cards, the games, the NBA late night televised games, one a week or two a week or whatever it was, the Sunday morning, I can't remember what the show was called. Anyway, there's heaps of stuff. I was obsessed, absolutely obsessed. And I still love basketball now. And it's amazing to see what the Australian Basketball League and collective efforts have done to increase Australia's presence in the basketball world internationally. And there are more Australians playing in the NBA now than ever before. It's not a novelty anymore. It's not like a little flash in the pan. It is legitimate players getting over there and building really big significant careers over there. There are amazing guys over there that are doing amazing things for basketball. And I don't know how many times I can say amazing, but there you go. Amazing, amazing, amazing. Any excuse to talk basketball, I'm there. I've got my hand up. I'm ready to go. So Oliver was no exception. I was really fascinated with journalism and writing, and also being able to wrap that up in basketball was just a great mixture. So Oliver and I talk about his journey into journalism, writing, what he loves about it, some of the little unique things about being a journalist, especially a sports journalist. We talk about basketball. We talk about his plans in the future to hopefully get over to the United States and do journalism over there and do some NBA stuff, some correspondence stuff. There's lots of great things in this chat, lots of great insights, especially if you're a writer in general. You don't have to be a journalist or a reporter or anything like that. But if you're an aspiring writer, it's just a really interesting chat. Lots of cool little insights here. And Oliver's a really interesting guy and a really easy guy to talk to. And I just had a great time talking to him about what he does on a day-to-day basis and just talking about basketball. I need to have more basketball conversations on this podcast. Sorry for anybody out there that doesn't give a shit about basketball. Too bad. It's going to happen. I need to get more basketball players on here. I've had Leroy Loggins. I've had Adam Ballinger on the podcast, and I'm sure I've missed a couple of other people. Anyway, I need more basketball players. I've tried to reach out to ex-NBA players from the 90s. They're a little bit elusive, but anyway, different story. Enough waffling on from me. You can follow Oliver on Twitter by searching Oliver K, or you can go twitter.com/OliverK, that's K-A-Y 20, Oliver K 20. I'll have all the links in the show notes anyway, including some of his articles. But enough crapping on for me. Please enjoy this great chat with Oliver K. I don't know if you still are, but you were or are still a writer for the Sydney Kings?
Yeah, that was kind of one of the things that I'm not anymore. That was kind of, I guess this kind of opens the door to a bit of a long story, but in terms of my writing, my basketball writing, it's kind of been a very indirect route to it. And that was kind of one of the latest steps. So I finished my basically coming out of high school. I had a lot of interest that pulled me in a variety of different directions. I took my music very seriously. I played drums and still play drums. I was in some bands with some friends. I had science was another interest of mine. And writing, although it always been my number one strength, it's what I did best at. It was not something, at least coming out of high school, that I thought of pursuing as a career. Mm-hmm. So coming out of high school, I went and did science for a year and a half at Monash. And really enjoyed it, but there was just a moment where things kind of shifted, and I was like, "Nah, this isn't quite for me." So, I pulled out of science and was kind of a bit lost for a while. Kind of 6 months after that was a bit like, "Where the heck do I go now?" As a much younger, kind of not really understanding that these are the kind of things that everyone goes through. Like, now looking back, I don't know. In my circle of friends, there's probably people I can count on one hand that actually finished to completion the course they did out of high school when they went to university. Mm. But at the time, I was like, gosh, what do I do? So took 6 months off and then was like, okay, time to get stuck back in. Enrolled at Monash to do a Bachelor of Arts and thought, okay, what's kind of a major that I can do in an arts degree that's going to be the most practical, thinking pragmatically at the time, like what can kind of give me an advantage, put me over the top. And obviously I was thinking, well, writing has been the thing that's kind of always been my sort of the foundational pillar of kind of my strength, I guess. So like do journalism. And then I was doing journalism, really liking it, loving it, but at the same time kind of not really knowing where I would take it. And meanwhile, basketball had always been something I was obsessed with. But it, plugging away my journalistic degree, it just never clicked until literally my last semester of my third year, where I happened to spot on like a jobs board or something like that at university. I can't remember the specifics of it, where the Sydney Kings were looking for someone to kind of help out at the club. Just sort of watch games, kind of do pretty menial stuff, really, like sort of watch the game and kind of note at what points in the game certain things, spectacular plays, highlight plays would happen. And so I wasn't really creating my own content. I was kind of doing stuff to help others make their own content. So it was pretty menial stuff. But from that point, that really triggered kind of putting both feet into basketball. So I'm not at the Kings anymore, but that kind of really was the jumping off point for me for where I've sort of ended up. Well, I'm still working, obviously, to kind of make it as best I can, but that was sort of the thing that really got things going for sure.
That's so cool that you just, I mean, I'm oversimplifying it, but just sort of falling into it in a way, just, you know, sort of trying to work out which direction you go in general, and then just sort of, I guess, you know, feeling the waters as they sort of roll in.
Well, yeah, in hindsight now, it was kind of, this was the obvious path. But at the time, I was kind of being pulled in lots of different directions by my various interests, that what I lacked was kind of a focus on one thing in particular. And then that kind of just came with time, yeah.
And I'm not sure if you mentioned it earlier, but like, when you sort of made that decision of going down the path of journalism and you sort of said like writing's a bit of a strength that you have, I mean, what sort of things were you doing in a writing capacity sort of in the past that sort of got you feeling like this, where you had a little bit of a strength there that you could sort of extend on?
Well, I loved creative writing. When I was sort of in primary school, there was like writing competitions. We'd have like our book week kind of thing, which most schools have, and they would be like a competition to write a story, and the librarian and some other teachers would kind of judge them. And I actually won a few of those. And I loved reading as a kid and loved stories. So it started off not with an interest in journalistic writing. It initially kicked off with like a really interesting creative writing, So if we're going way back, I guess that's kind of what kind of kicked it off. And then there was kind of a lull period where I wasn't really producing stuff for my own pleasure or my own satisfaction. I was kind of, it was just sort of, I was writing for like essays at school and SACs and other things like that were kind of more academically driven. And like I said, it was towards the end of my third year of my second go at uni when I was doing my arts degree. So 5 years into tertiary study, where I was like, I've kind of found the love of writing for the sake of the love of writing. And obviously I had career goals in mind that were kind of keeping me motivated, but that's kind of, it was very late. It was very late in the piece. I kind of, I had it when I was very young, kind of let it go for a bit. I was still good at writing and it kind of was my best sort of my strength, like I said, but then it wasn't until much later that I kind of came back to writing for the sake of writing.
And I would assume that journalism, and it's probably a very sort of broad topic or broad sort of term, but compared to some of the stuff that you had done sort of years gone by where, you know, you're doing a lot of creative writing and sort of very sort of narrative-based sort of writing, and then I would assume, because I know nothing about journalism, but journalism would be, I assume there'd be some narrative there involved, but it's more of a documentation of what's going on. And was that a way that sort of helped you sort of appreciate more that there was more dynamics or more approaches that you could take when it comes to different types of writing?
Yeah, absolutely. At first I kind of thought, oh gosh, this is really restrictive. I kind of feel like of all the sort of mediums, I guess, of writing, I'm kind of doing the most restrictive one. That's what I thought. I kind of was getting my first taste for it. But I think within the parameters of journalism, which in some cases can be restrictive, especially when you're reporting facts, doing like the real sort of nuts and bolts style of journalism, it can be a bit like that. But there's plenty of scope for that kind of thing. Like the writing I tend to do these days as it relates to basketball is telling a story while reporting facts. In a lot of the cases, like I do like to do features, which kind of incorporates that sort of more creative voice. Kind of that's what kind of makes a good feature, is obviously you want to focus on your subject, but you want to have a voice that comes through as well. And kind of that lends itself to, I guess, not to sound so like pretentious here, but my creative roots, I guess, for lack of a better term.
With journalism, just to dig into that just a little bit more, but are there different types of or different terminology as far as the different types of journalism that's out there? So if you're looking at it a bit more from a technical point of view, are there different types of journalists out there that have different categories of work or different types of writing within the journalism sphere?
Yeah, absolutely. Like there's as many styles and sort of categories of journalism as there are subjects, and then that's not even getting into the variety of mediums that come with it as well. Like you're doing a kind of a form of journalism, like with your podcast. That's kind of a, and that opens up a whole other branch of categories and stuff like that. But I guess for me, I'm doing like reporting, feature writing, and then there's people that would do profiles where you're kind of exploring the person, like a politician or something like that. So it's kind of an endless pool. And although there are definitely categories that kind of can help kind of with the labeling of stuff, it's such a deep sort of and wide subject or field, I should say. I mean, I feel like I barely scratched the surface with my own work. There's a whole world out there, that's for sure.
You mentioned before playing in bands and having a bit of exposure to music and those sort of dynamics. Do you find that, I'm just making these things up in my head as you're explaining it, whether there's this, you know, at times this elitism within the sort of the journalism world where, you know, like music, you know, with musicians, and there's a bit of elitism as far as this is what I'm good at, my particular niche sort of sub-genre section of the music world, and in journalism might be a similar sort of thing where there's a little bit of ego and I'm the best at this type of journalism versus somebody else. Is that exist at all?
There's definitely hierarchy. I would definitely say that. My experience has been pretty positive in terms of my interactions with people. I wouldn't go as far to say in my experience, I've come across elitism as such, but there's definitely a pecking order and a hierarchy, like where in certain situations that there's, you defer to the more senior journalist, whether it be at a press scrum or press conference, the people who are the more experienced names and more well-recognized names get kind of the lion's share of questions or the first questions and things like that. But I have to say my experience, like I know exactly what you're talking about when it comes to music. When I was sort of in that area, when I was in high school in bands, definitely came across that kind of thing that you're talking about, where there's that real kind of elitism, I guess is the best word, like you said. But I think in journalism there's definitely a hierarchy, but at least in my experience, and it may be very different for lots of other people, that I haven't come across that kind of nastier side, which I'm sure it does exist.
Yeah, it's something that I'm fascinated with, especially as far as how different little communities or different sort of groups interact with each other. And there's always sort of this, as you mentioned before, is a great word, hierarchy, where there's certain things that you learn as you go, as far as where you sit and I guess levels of respect and how you approach certain subjects or certain settings. And even just to hear you say things like, you know, at certain conferences, there'll be particular people that have got preference or preferential treatment because of their tenure or who they're working for or just their reputation in the field. And I find that really fascinating because it's always these little nuances that just make it really fascinating to understand how these dynamics can play out.
Yeah, and it takes time to kind of learn to sort of navigate that as well. Like I've had in the last few years moments where I've put my foot in it accidentally, sort of stepping on someone's toes without meaning to. And I've been lucky in terms of I haven't like been blacklisted or given the cold shoulder for any of those mistakes or anything. In fact, it's been really positive, those experiences. I've been kind of really well looked after. I have to say the basketball community in terms of the writers that I deal with is terrific. But I've definitely had those moments where I've gone, oh, crap, what have I done? Have I shot myself in the foot here? Because without knowing the kind of the unspoken rules of etiquette that exists in the sort of the what can be a pretty dog-eat-dog world of sports journalism, for sure.
What's have you got an example of what some of these sort of unspoken sort of etiquette things, just to give a bit of insight of certain things that you have to sort of keep in mind when you're sort of dealing with this stuff on a day-to-day basis?
Well, like if you go to, I guess the best example is kind of what I touched on before. Like if you're going to a press conference, you let the senior journalists go first. It's kind of like, although you're kind of told in sort of quote unquote journalism school that you've got to be out there tenacious and aggressive, which is all true things and useful characteristics. At the same time, you've kind of got to let the senior guys kind of have their time in the sun first. And when I was, this was a few years back, going to a press conference, speaking to Matthew Dellavedova, who I don't know if your audience knows, is an Australian basketball player, plays in America in the NBA. And he was in Australia doing an event. And after the event, there was a press conference. And it was my first time going to something like this. And I was like, okay, got to get a question in. And I kind of jumped the gun and I got some people sort of turn around and give me a bit of a sideways glance as they go, who's this young upstart? So there's things like that exist that are kind of the unspoken rules. And it's the same thing, like if you went to a post-match press conference or something like that, the mic goes to the front first and you kind of let the front row kind of belongs to those senior journalists and you kind of sit at the back. And I mean, if you want to ask a question, it's not like they won't let you sit at the front. There's kind of these sort of, like I said, hierarchy, kind of pyramid structure, if you like, that you don't get necessarily taught about. You kind of have to experience that for yourself.
And I guess, you know, especially for you trying to find opportunities along the way of who to you know, work with and getting leads and exclusives and things like that, you kind of want to be on as many people's sides as possible, just so yeah. that you're thought of favorably when certain things pop up that might one person might not be available to do, and you're that person that's thought of as that next option.
Yeah, and that can make things stressful. Like I said, when you make those mistakes, because it's all about connections and kind of nurturing and building those relationships and networks. Because in the world of reporting and journalism, without those connections, you kind of up the creek without a paddle. So you're kind of constantly navigating that, whether it be with fellow journalists, whether it be with sort of contacts behind the scenes in various fields, whether it's in politics, sport, entertainment, music, etc. You're kind of keeping those behind the scenes relationships kind of constantly on the boil and touching base all the time. And so yeah, that itself brings its own challenges that, I mean, I'm still very much still navigating and kind of coming to grips with.
Are there, and you don't have to name names, but I mean, you mentioned before that, you know, you've had a pretty good run and great experiences so far overall with, you know, you being in this world. But just speaking of things like reputation and networking and keeping up appearances, do you hear of other people's reputations out there, good and bad, and like certain people that you might hear through secondhand information? It's like, oh, be wary of this particular person, or this person's got a bit of a reputation for whatever. Is it that kind of stuff that also gets around that you're sort of aware of, that you have to sort of keep in mind when you're doing your job?
Absolutely, yeah. Your reputation is always out there. It's always something that you've got to be aware of. And so there are absolutely sort of people and groups, and again, I won't name names, mm-hmm. that I've sort of heard from people like, you've got to take this approach because if you don't take that approach, you won't hear from them, or you may not get what you want. And so you're dealing with people. Like, yeah. it's an industry like everything else. It's full of people with their own quirks and personalities and little sort of, you know, unique traits. And so it's balancing that. And you hear all the time, like from people, like when I'm talking to my editor and I'm saying, I want to talk to this person, can you help me get in contact, and so on. And I often get, here's the contact. Keep this in mind. Maybe take this approach because so-and-so's had a bad experience. We know that this person maybe won't take that very well, might take a certain question to heart. Yeah, you're dealing with personalities, egos, sometimes like incompetence all the time. Like it kind of runs the gamut, kind of a wide spectrum.
I mean, a big part, I would assume, of being a journalist is exactly what you just said before, as far as reaching out to people to ask questions, to get comments, to obtain information, to be able to then go away and write your piece. And for you sort of years and years ago, really sort of being immersed into the creative writing, which would be a very sort of, I guess, very inner sort of thing that you would do, where you're digging into yourself to create these pieces. Whereas journalism, there would be a lot of outward stuff where you have to interact with people. Was that a challenge for you to have to get used to, where you'd have to go and, you know, ask a question or pick up the phone and have a chat to somebody or meet someone in person to try and extract information? Was that a challenge for you?
Yeah, it was in a way. Like, it's one thing to kind of have a conversation that's kind of occurring naturally and organically, and it's another thing to kind of get into a conversation with someone or talk to someone and know that the entire purpose of that conversation is for you to extract information from them. And so that kind of puts a bit of especially earlier on, like a kind of sense of pressure, I guess, that can definitely take some time to kind of get over. And especially, and there's also this sense of, yeah, like you said, creative writing is a very solitary sort of inner experience. And when you're going out to write and report, you're depending on other people. So you need your interviews to go as well as possible. So there's this sort of, there's a pressure relating to that too, because you know that this has to go well. You've got your, in some cases, you may only have one shot to get what you need. And so, yeah, and then that creates a pressure. So it's something that sort of just, it goes away with time. Like if you, I went to, I was lucky enough to go to an event where I spoke to Ben Simmons. It wasn't a one-on-one thing. It was in a sort of a press scrum after an event he'd done in Melbourne. And I'd done many interviews before, there's this whole other thing comes up when you're talking to someone who's so one of the most recognized Australians on the planet right now is standing right in front of you, and you've got a bunch of other journalists who are waiting for their turn. Then you get your turn and everyone's like, all right, hurry up, ask your question because I want to go next. And then that creates pressure. You've got this sort of sports icon and hero in front of you. You're kind of going, oh, I hope I don't stutter or mess my words up or something like that. I've got this one shot. So there's all sorts of little things that kind of can play at your mind. But that, it, like in any job, it sort of just goes away with time.
Do you feel that in those moments, because even before you mentioned the word stutter, I was thinking in my head, oh, I would be stuttering and getting the sequence of the words all out of whack. I would just make no sense whatsoever, because I'd be putting so much pressure on myself going, oh
yeah,
it's about to be me. But in those situations, in that sort of press scrum sort of situations, and I mean I watch a lot of that sort of stuff, especially with basketball, so I can sort of imagine this scenario. Is there a feeling, I'm just trying to think of, like, obviously the agenda that you have is you're trying to get a comment that you can put into your piece that you're going to be writing at a later time.
Yeah.
But do you find that, maybe not so much yourself, but with other people, that people are overthinking the question that they're going to ask in the hope that they can cut through and get attention, that it's going to be like this groundbreaking question, it's going to be something that's different, it's going to surprise people? Is that in sort of a journalist's mind, that they're trying to cut through that noise? Because one thing that I sort of experienced as a musician, and I was super conscious of when I started this podcast, was you're asking the same questions over and over again for the most part, and it's the same sort of thing. So you get into a very Q&A sort of setting, and I would assume sports journalism would be like this more often than not.
Yeah.
Do people overthink this in these types of situations where they're trying to not so much one up everybody else, but just try to cut through the noise?
Yeah, definitely. You're part of the whole thing of journalism is to get a story that no one's told before, or gain a perspective, or give your audience a perspective or readers a perspective that they haven't heard before. So what comes with that is sometimes it comes down to asking a uniquely framed question. And yeah, you can definitely overthink it. And a lot of it comes down to the context that you ask it. Like if you're asking some incredibly long-winded question in a sort of press scrum, that's entirely inappropriate. You're not going to get what you want anyway. But it's the context of the question. Like if I was asking, one-on-one, I could get down into kind of the nitty-gritty. So, overthinking your questions is definitely a real thing. But at the same time, like I said, you've got to kind of put some thought into your questions to kind of, like I said, the goal is to get something new. At least that should be the goal, in my opinion, as much as you can, to gain something insightful from your subject that no one else has got. And so, yeah, sometimes overthinking a question can lead to something, like maybe the question doesn't even understand it because you've kind of, there's a long question that leads nowhere, gives them no jumping off point or anything that they can sink their teeth into, and you've kind of, it completely backfires. So I would say that there is the art of the question is a real thing. Like there are great interviewers out there that are great for a reason. They have a reputation for being great interviewers for a reason, because sometimes they ask the simple questions and sometimes they throw a curveball complex question in there. And it's definitely a skill that is kind of not given the sort of the deference that it deserves, because it's so fundamental to everything like that you and I do, essentially. That's the kind of the core of everything.
Well, I mean, one thing that I always hear people talk about is like the quality of the answers only going to be as good as the quality of the questions. So
absolutely,
you know, people will, you know, maybe complain that they don't have the information or the answers to be able to do something, but maybe they're not asking the right question in the first place. And so that's one thing that does my head in, because it's like, I'm always fixated on the answers. I'm trying to find the answers, but I need to sort of look at myself first and go, well, am I putting the focus in the right area to get the right outcome? And it's quite fascinating. And I would assume that just, you know, you mentioning that and describing it that way, that there would have to have been situations in the past, whether you're at a press conference or these press scrums, and somebody else, a peer or somebody else, has asked a question and you're sitting there going, what the hell was that? what came out of that person's mouth?
Yeah. There's and I always feel bad, because I'm like, that could have been me. Definitely could have been me, when the words don't come out. Like, it becomes like this verbal, sometimes it's like this verbal diarrhea where you're like, what is this guy, what is this athlete or so, whoever it may be, is supposed to do with that? And then the most annoying thing as well is when someone else asks you a question that you ask someone a question that you had penciled in. It's like, oh yeah, that's the one I'm going to ask. That's going to be the one that gives me the story that no one else does. And then some smart ass upstart gets in there before you do. And that's the worst thing. That's for sure. Selfishly, that's the worst thing. I don't care about other people suffering. I just kind of turn away. But when they eat into my stories, that's when I suck it.
That's it. You start to see red. That would be what would keep me up at night. I would, like, especially like the night before, you got a big day and you're really putting a lot of effort and focus into, you know, what you're going to ask, and just the fear of somebody getting in there and asking a very similar or the same question as what you're going to ask. I mean, that would be, I would assume that you'd have to have some reserves there just in case if something gets nabbed in the process.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You've got to have extra rounds in the chamber. Like, it's like I said before, it's the industry is kind of built on competition and dog eat dog. You kind of can't take things lying down, even when it's in sort of like a seemingly relaxed press conference or environment. There's competition happening, like, right before your eyes. Even though the game is finished, the sporting event that people pay to see is finished, there's this other struggle happening, kind of this unspoken struggle where people are constantly trying to kind of one up each other. And I say that, again, I have to repeat, like, my experience has been with the people that I work close to and with has been incredibly positive, but that doesn't negate the fact that there is this competition that is just, that permeates everything involved in what we do.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's the same as music as well. I mean, I've got a lot of good friends and peers that I've been playing with for years, and as much as we can, you know, have a beer and have a chat and have a great time, there's still an underlying element of competition there, and it's healthy. I mean, it's not something where people are trying to sabotage each other or anything like that. It's just a case of we want to do the best that we can, and there's something that we're striving for, and we're all trying to strive for things, and it just makes people want to do better and to strive for more.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like you said, like in the music sort of field, there's only so many spots at a venue. There's only so many bands that can be booked. There's only so many, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, inherently there's that competition. Like, it's very similar, I think. Yeah, it's kind of a great analogy to journalism, because there's this camaraderie that exists, but at the same time, only a few kind of float to the top, rise to the top, I guess.
Just going back to etiquette, one thing that I'm quite curious about, just as the way you've sort of described some of these settings where there's a lot of people surrounding an athlete or a person trying to extract information, ask different questions. What is there etiquette in place where you're sitting there, you've obviously got a story in mind, you've got a number of questions that you've got ready to go in the event that you're able to ask at least one. But if you're listening to somebody else ask a question before you're getting in and they answer something to that question, is there etiquette in place that means that you can't quote what they're saying in response to somebody else's question in your article? You can't refer to that. You can only focus on what you're asking and the response to you only. How does that work?
It's kind of when it's in like a public setting where you can kind of use what's out there. Like I've done questions I've gone to games, for example, and gone to the post-match press conference, and it might be an occasion where I actually don't even ask a question, but I'm still there. I've got my notepad. I'm recording the answers and other people are asking. So if I was doing an article and I wanted to use a quote from someone else's work, then I would definitely attribute that to the person. But when it comes to everyone's there at a press conference, until it's kind of on paper, it's kind of it's open for everyone to be used to use in their articles. So it's kind of coming to think of it, if you put a question out there, sometimes you might be at risk of someone else using your answer that was you kind of wanted to have as your own sort of silver bullet, magic bullet to kind of tell this amazing story. But generally speaking, people are there with their kind of their own agendas and stories in mind. And at a press conference, people are kind of asking quite sort of generic, general questions. People aren't really throwing out those curveballs that's going to get like that super juicy answer. It might happen once in a blue moon, but generally speaking, it's kind of like more kind of generic questions where someone doesn't necessarily have a claim to the answer. I guess that's kind of, I don't know if I've answered that question, but it's kind of, that's a good question. I haven't actually thought about it that way, but I've definitely used answers from questions that people have put to someone when I've been in the room and present there. So with press conferences, it's kind of different. Like if you turn on your news most nights and you're watching, I don't know, say ABC, you're watching the television and the politician may be answering a question that was asked by an SBS journalist or a Channel 9 journalist, but it fits to the story because most of the time, everyone, if they're politician speaking or after a game, generally speaking, the stories that will come from that will all be quite similar. So, yeah, I guess I don't know if I've answered that question in particular. I kind of rambled a bit.
No.
But, yeah, it's a good question.
It's interesting. Like, I mean, I just, especially when you sort of look around, you've got people from competing sort of media outlets and who knows what the dynamics and the relationships are like. And, you know, there could be some underlying pressure or history and things like that that always have to be considered. And I just, I also sort of envision, you know, that moment where somebody gives the exclusive or drops this bombshell and then everybody just runs off. They're quickly running off. They're on the phone calling back to whoever or they're logging on and quickly typing something. And it's just, I mean, I guess it depends on how you look. It's like anything really. I mean, you could almost look at it also that even though you're there to try and get a question to extract some information that's going to help with something that you have in your mind as far as a piece that you're writing, ultimately, everybody else there asking questions is probably helping each other by all extracting information to assist each other in a way, even though you've all got your individual agendas.
Absolutely.
Sort of, you're all sort of just working together to get as much information from this person as possible.
Yeah, exactly. You're kind of, in terms of when questions are being asked, things are kind of bouncing. You're kind of in a room together bouncing ideas off each other in a way. It's a good way of putting it, is that in those sort of situations, it's kind of almost like a team effort. Everyone's kind of extracting the information from the subject, and then the team game ends and it becomes an individual sport when you go off and scuttle off into your corner, into your dark little corner and try and write your article as quickly as you can. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier about your time at the Sydney Kings and what you were doing initially was sort of this sort of very, I guess, fact-driven sort of kind of mundane in a way, but just sort of very, you know, you're just documenting what's going on and the events that are happening. But you sort of touched on during that time that it sort of clicked for you and thought this is something, you know, obviously you enjoy basketball, you're something that you're interested in and these things are starting to link up. But was there something in particular about that time with the Kings or something else that was happening around that time that sort of gave you that light bulb moment that thought this is something that I've really sort of got to dig in deeper and not commit more to, because you're already committing to it, but like really sort of, I guess, get more clarity as far as this is something that I want to do long term?
Yeah, that's a good question. It kind of was, it accumulated over time. It was initially when I got the job, which was unpaid, it was a voluntary position. It was kind of like I want to get a taste of things. And like I said, the task, there was nothing creative whatsoever about it. I would literally watch the game from home on the couch, and like I said, note the different plays, kind of timestamp them, and a brief description that would get sent to the club, who would then send it off as like a part of a press package that would go to other people. So it wasn't like, oh my goodness, this is so amazing. I wasn't, the job itself didn't inspire me. It was more the chance to kind of be a part of something, as small a part as it was, and I mean a tiny part that it was in the grand scheme of the Kings, and let alone the National Basketball League. But what followed soon from that was, I actually, and it came from university, I saw another job came up, on like a university job notification board, and this one was for Basketball Victoria, which is kind of like the governing body of basketball in Victoria, funnily enough. Mm-hmm. And they were looking for someone as sort of like a freelance writer. And I was like, even though this, what I'm doing at the Sydney Kings is menial and sort of repetitive, I'm already getting a sense that I'm getting a taste of a field that I really enjoy. So I applied for that and got the job. So, and then things went on from there. It wasn't like a moment. Like, it wasn't like I was watching a game and I was like, oh, this is such a good game. I want to do this for the rest of my life, or work towards making this a career. Although I was having thoughts like that sort of intermittently over time, it was kind of like I got a morsel of kind of the industry, and that was enough. Like, and I'd always had this love for basketball. I was always talking about it with friends. I would ravenously consume as much content as possible, like overseas, YouTube videos, all sorts of things. And I was like, if I put my mind to it, if I reach out to people and show them what I can do, I can start being a part of producing the sort of content that I love consuming myself. So, yeah, it was sort of a drawn-out process, I guess, than one sort of initial big, bright, obvious spark and flash.
You're writing now. I mean, if you're looking at it sort of from a percentage point of view, because obviously you're writing for Basketball Victoria, and I've noticed you do a number of different things, obviously being a freelance journalist.
Yeah.
What's the percentage look like as far as the types of, I guess, code within the basketball community that you're covering? Because obviously we've got the NBL here, but there's also, you know, state-based stuff. There's other codes or other grades,
yeah,
of game. What's the ratio sort of look like at the moment that you're sort of immersed in?
In terms of myself, I've kind of carved out a little sort of spot for myself. It's mostly dealing with our men's league in Australia, the NBL. That's kind of what I produce most of my work is sort of centered around. But I would say maybe two-thirds would be that. The other third would be the NBA, which is my first love. Mm. And that's kind of what got me into it. And I guess it's sort of becoming more 50-50. Depends on the time of year. Obviously, sports are a very seasonal thing, so it depends on the time of year in terms of where your attention is put. I do very occasionally might do something on Europe, because there's some Australians playing over there in Europe. But in terms of like the junior stuff and maybe the state competitions, I don't typically cover that. Maybe once in a blue moon if I'm covering for someone, or if anything happens, I need someone to cover a particular story. But typically, yeah, like I said, it's the men's league in Australia and the NBA is kind of typically what I is what my radar is tuned to.
Do you, just mentioning sort of those ratios changing or trending in a particular direction where it might become 50-50 in the future, is that sort of based around, I guess, how much more presence Australian basketball has in the NBA now? Because, I mean, I just, for me, I mean, I I grew up in the 90s and I'm very similar to you. Like one of the first loves I ever had, and this is even before music, was the NBA. Many kids, like you just became obsessed with the whole basketball card frenzy that happened in the 90s and one-on-one magazines and watching like just the one game per week that was on at 11 p.m. at night or whatever it was. But it was just, at the time, it was just, you know, the only exposure that you had, obviously the NBL was doing really well at that time because they were obviously feeding off the hype of the NBA. But as far as Australians having presence in the NBA, it was few and far between, apart from, you know, Luke Longley and then some of the guys in sort of the late 90s, you know, Shane Hill getting a spot and Andrew Gaze and Brad Key and some of those guys getting like little spots here and there, Angsty as well. But it was almost like a novelty. It was like they're getting their little 5 minutes in the spotlight and then they didn't hang on. But in these more recent years, it's a completely different story. Is that what you think is sort of driving a lot of this change as far as, at least for you personally?
Oh, without a doubt. You're right. Like until like 10, 15 years ago, like when Andrew Bogut entered the league as the number one draft pick, Australians were kind of cameos in the NBA. It was kind of like, oh, here's the little Aussie battler in the NBA. Oh, isn't that cute? Like that kind of thing. Like it definitely drew eyeballs to the NBA without a doubt. But it was sort of more of a novelty. Now we've got, not only do we have some almost like a constant stream of local talent going overseas, but they're stepping into important roles. I mean, obviously Luke Longley had an important role. He's kind of the exception Andrew Bogut. But before that, it was kind of like little cameo things here and there. And now, we've got the talent that's being drafted in the first round in the top 10, or in Simmons' case, like Bogut number one. And so that influx of Australian talent overseas is huge because, although the NBL is making a huge resurgence and a comeback, everything then back to the NBA. Like the success of domestic leagues in Australia is still predicated, and probably will forever be predicated on the NBA. And the way that that's exploding just opens up so many avenues for writers like myself. And I mean, I'm a bit biased given the fact how much I love the sport, but I couldn't really think of any better field of sports journalism to get into if you're up and coming or starting than basketball at the moment, because it's only growing. It's not big and bloated and struggling under its own weight like some other codes perhaps are, or take the media for granted. It's probably a better way of putting it than some codes are. This is a sport that's hungry for more voices and for more content, and so the demand is only going to get bigger, which is really exciting. It's a great time to kind of be doing what I'm doing, I'm sort of just hungry to get to kind of take it, ride this wave as far and as long as I can.
Well, I think that was going to be one of the questions I was going to ask you, as far as, you know, obviously there's the NBA's opening up the doors and there's so many more opportunities and so many players are actually not just going over there as a quick little flash in the pan. They're becoming, you know, role players in a number of teams and having success. And, you know, a number of them were in the playoffs this year. It was just incredible. Something that was unheard of, you know, as you said, about 10 odd years ago. But for everybody else that's associated with the league, excluding players, it just opens up all these opportunities as well. So as you mentioned, like for yourself, in the capacity that you are, there's just so many potentials there as far as opportunities that you can sort of grow yourself, you know, your own skill set, but also being able to sort of, you know, report on things and be exposed to different people. And it must be a little bit intoxicating in a way, because there's just so much that could come out of all of this. I mean, as you said, it's still sort of in its early stages. There's still so much growth to be had.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, you're right. Like you kind of got to remind yourself like one step at a time, because it's kind of easy to overwhelm yourself with kind of trying, kind of spreading yourself too thin and wanting to kind of try and absorb and be involved with everything. And kind of just going back to a point you made, like not only is Australian basketball growing in terms of the players overseas, but we're seeing more and more Australian voices sort of also make that pilgrimage over to the States, and in terms of writers and content producers and media figures, like Nick Lee Ellis, who's the over there. Yeah, Nick Medellinos as well, who's over there working for ESPN. And you've got Tom Reed, who works over there, who lives in the States, working for NBA Australia and NBA Canada. There's even some guys that work with the same organization that I predominantly write for, who have gone over there, and Ben Mallis and Kane, who have gone over there and off their own back, kind of wanting to go over there and really kind of immerse themselves in the world of basketball, and kind of blend an Australian voice over there to kind of in concert with the Australian players. So, I mean, yeah, that it's exciting, and it is intoxicating without a doubt, that there's this sort of growing ecosystem that's kind of getting bigger and more complex, that you kind of, everyone's trying to find their way in it and kind of navigate it as it grows, which is in itself makes things really exciting.
I think from a very sort of simpleton sort of perspective of everything that's sort of happening in the basketball world, I mean, for me, you know, growing up in the 90s and, you know, being absolutely obsessed with the NBA, but also having this growing love for the NBL, was doing quite well, and there was a level of popularity that was happening around that time, but the NBL always seemed to be like the dorky little brother of the NBA. It was just something that nothing was as cool, or it was just sort of like,
yeah,
them. It was a little bit of a try hard thing, but it was still extremely popular. I mean, I remember going to Brisbane Bullet games when I was growing up at Boondall, and just like absolutely being in awe of these guys, and just watching them and becoming obsessed with it. But, you know, obviously just like the NBA, when the NBA sort of went through all the lockouts, you know, sort of going into the 2000s, and the NBL just almost died off completely. But one thing I have noticed from the outside is that in the last few years, as, you know, different ownerships have changed and different people have come into the league and tried to, you know, inject new life into it, there seems to be this level of, it's not the right word, but I'll use it, this level of professionalism that's there that makes the league look so slick compared to it, compared to any other time in the past, where it's still not being spoken about in the same breath as all the other mainstream sporting codes in this country, but it's getting a bit more of a foot in than ever before. And it seems to be doing it in a way that is less sort of clumsy or awkward. It just seems to be like this, like when the spotlight is on it and there's an opportunity to talk about it, it's done in such a slick way that it just seems like, you know, we're here and we've got our shit together, and you can come along or you can get left in the dust. And I think it just, I think people are taking it far more seriously than they ever have before.
Yeah, definitely. And that, all the credit goes to sort of the leadership that is in place now at the NBL, what they've done to sort of turn around the perception of the league in a matter of years, from, like you said, when the league was at a pretty low point, where teams seemed to sort of come in and out of existence almost on a yearly basis, where teams would come in, go bankrupt and disappear, another one would pop up, and it was almost difficult to keep track of who was who and what teams were what. And now there's this, there's this real confidence that the league has got in terms of the way it conducts itself, not only on a sort of game day sort of basis, but in terms of its media presence. That there's a real, and there's some really passionate people involved in the who write about it, who I think are doing a terrific job of really drawing eyes to the sport, and I think touching on a point you made before, the NBL, the kind of, to use what you said, is kind of always going to be like the dorky little brother to the NBA. It's always going to play second fiddle, but I think it's getting to the point where it's the little brother that can stand up to itself now.
Yeah, it's
getting to the point where it can stand on its own two feet. It's still going to always lean heavily on the NBA. Like I would say every domestic basketball competition around the world does. Mm. That's kind of the bedrock that everyone else kind of, every other league is built on. But, I mean, the NBL, there's a variety of programs that are in place now that are coaxing over some really exciting young talent from the States that open the doors to like young American talent coming over and playing. Like although it's still a very Australian league, it's becoming more and more international, and I think that's become a really big key to the league's success, among a variety of other factors that I could rattle on all day about. But I think the quality of the Americans coming over is remarkable. That it's seen as a real place where you can earn good money, play in a good league, and also play on a stage that can get you noticed by the NBA or some of the European leagues that are really reputable. So then that feeds into the whole media ecosystem and sort of confidence breeds confidence in every sort of facet of the sport and the league.
I think, I mean, even sort of me growing up and getting into basketball, you know, I always looked at Europe and just thought, you know, yeah, okay, it's not the NBA, it's not as exciting, but wow, like that looks like such a cutthroat part of the world when it comes to basketball and just something that's ultra serious. And they've, you know, when you looked at the European players that were entering the league in the 90s or even the late 80s and some real personalities, and you just think, like, the perception of those leagues in throughout Europe were of a certain standard. And I guess maybe everybody sort of unfairly puts a bit of shit on your sort of your home country or your hometown or whatever it is.
Mm.
But I think there's something very sort of, and even going back to using that word dorky, I think part of the reason why I sort of use that word is that I think Australian culture has a level of dorkiness to it anyway, where I think we've got that self-deprecating humor, we're very humble, we're not too flash, we just like to sort of have a good time and sort of take the piss and all that sort of stuff, and that's always going to be in our culture. But I think there's been a bit more of a healthy detachment or a healthy balance. We haven't sort of immersed ourselves in that completely compared to what maybe we would have in the past. Because now, I mean, you nailed it before as far as, you know, all the Americans that are coming here now, it's obviously a legitimate place for people to use the league as a stepping stone to get back in, to get into the NBA and to, you know, cut their teeth and to be recognized. And for a long time that was Europe. I mean, and now it's an additional option, an additional place that people can consider in as well as Europe. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool just to see that. I think obviously people here have seen where I guess the opportunities are and where the areas of improvement you know can possibly be, and have just put a lot of time and resources into taking it up a notch and several notches, and it's amazing. I mean, even to see sort of all the additional events that are coming to Australia with, you know, USA Basketball and all this kind of stuff,
it just
goes to show how legitimate it's becoming.
Yeah, we're developing this sort of this reputation, and I remember years back watching the NBL and stuff like that, and it kind of felt like it was perceived as kind of like the retirement home for sort of the washed up players and stuff like that, and I don't mean to sound disrespectful, but in terms of the way it was perceived, that was definitely something that existed, and now it's exactly the opposite. Like you said, it's not so much a place where careers go to end. It's a jumping off point for a lot of people. I mean, I guess Andrew Bogart's kind of a bit of an exception. He's coming here to kind of do his sort of, I guess, retirement tour. But even he's gone back to the NBA. He's playing finals basketball right now. So, I mean, it just goes to show, like, he was coming to the NBL kind of thinking maybe his career in America was behind him. But the quality of the league and the way he was able to exhibit his skills, he won the MVP and the Defensive Player of the Year. He got called back, and I think – and then that's another example of the league really kind of maturing into something really reputable and internationally respected. There was a few days ago when RJ Hampton committed to coming to play for the New Zealand Breakers, part of the Next Stars program, which is this program that's bringing these young Americans who don't want to play in the college system to come and play professionally before opting into the, if they choose to opt into the NBA draft. And the commissioner of the NBA was on an ESPN talk show talking about the whole event and kind of Australian basketball. And without an Australian in front of him, because often I think when Americans being interviewed about Australian basketball by an Australian, and I get asked a question that they kind of do the political answer where they talk up Australian basketball and you kind of take it with a grain of salt. Yeah. But in front of an American audience and asked by an American, he spoke incredibly glowingly about the Australian basketball system and structure. And I think, again, that's just yet another example that this is one of the most powerful and influential people in basketball, talking about how he envies Australian basketball and the system that exists. I mean, because we poached one of their high school prospects straight from under their nose, and that says a heck of a lot. And I think only more will follow. I really think that that there's going to be an influx of this, because as you may know, there's huge growing resentment that's becoming more and more vocal about the NCAA system and how it kind of exploits young athletes. And the NBL's popped its hand up and gone, we're another option. We will pay you. You play professionally. You play against grown men, professional players who play at a high standard, and we'll train you. We'll look after you. We'll pay you. And we'll provide you a stage that is internationally recognized for you to exhibit your skills.
Oh man, like it almost makes me want to think that give my own shot in the NBL. I was always a frustrated basketball player in the 90s. I was a fat little kid with a frolet and just attempting to dunk a ring that was probably sitting about 5 foot off the ground and just lying right down. But it's exciting just to see that. It's really, I mean, the league's been around for ages, but it's really still in its infancy, especially now with this sort of revamp over the past few years.
Yeah.
Where it's just sort of taken it up a notch. It's just, it's incredibly exciting.
Yeah, well, it's a new beginning. It's almost like the last, what was it, 40 or more years were kind of like a sort of building up to this moment. It's almost like a reboot, rebirth. And I think it's not to downplay the importance of the 90s NBL, which is incredibly important. And those founding fathers, if you like, hold an incredibly important place. But I think this is a new era that has the potential to kind of really propel not just the league, I mean, the sport in general into a pretty exciting realm.
Well, before we wrap it up, I've got to ask you, because this episode's going to be a little bit delayed. I've been recording in advance, but as of today, the playoffs are happening. The finals are on, and it's okay. It's 1-1 at the moment. So we've got the Raptors and the Warriors, and you know, no surprise with the Warriors being back in. Although I was really hoping they didn't get, although Bogut's in it, it would have been so exciting to see another Western Conference team get into the finals. But where's your head at with this series so far? And have you got any predictions as far as any storylines that you're thinking about, or even just the big question of who's going to take it?
That's a good question, because things change day to day. So before the series started, I was thinking, I think my prediction was Warriors in six, just because of the depth of talent. But now they're bruised and battered and kind of shorthanded. But look, I think, getting a bit nerdy here, but I think the Raptors chances, I feel like unless Pascal Siakam or Marc Gasol or both have a big game or have big games, they don't have. They're not going to win. If you look through the playoffs prior to this series, their wins have come from, like, Kawhi's been terrific. He's been on a freakish run. He's shown up almost every game. But the wins have come from when a co-star steps up. He can't do it by himself. So I think I'm sticking. I stick with the Warriors because of their experience. And as boring of an answer as that is, I would love to see the Raptors kind of shock everyone. But I mean, I don't know if you've by the time this comes out, it'll be old news. But there's possibilities of Kevin Durant coming back. That's the huge story. But I think the story to keep an eye on is watch the Raptors co-stars, because I think the Raptors go where the co-stars of Kawhi Leonard lead them, because Kawhi's solid as a rock, but he's only getting more tired and more beaten up. So I think that's the big factor is the benches of each team, but especially the Raptors.
Well, I'm so glad that obviously Cleveland got absolutely gutted as far as player-wise over the last season or so. So they didn't even have a chance this year. But it was just nice to see a relatively strong Eastern Conference. I mean, it was pretty exciting to watch some of those matchups and to see Milwaukee sort of just all season just to be for what they've been able to do is just incredible and such a great line, and for like really young guys as well is really cool. And so for me, it was almost getting to a point where I was like, can we just get rid of the conferences and just have like an Eastern Conference finals, because some of them were just incredible. And there were some good matchups in the Western Conference, but I think we've been so used to this really strong Western Conference where there's these legacy teams, these teams that have been in the finals for so many years. And that's changed a little bit this year, and some new surprises in there. But I just, at least from my end, I just looked at the Eastern Conference and went, wow, like now it's getting exciting from that side of the country. There's heaps of storylines there. A lot of Aussies that are popping up throughout a lot of these markets. And just to see the Raptors in there as well, because they've been one of the ones that have sort of shot themselves in the foot so many years in a row in the playoffs.
And they've made themselves the butt of the joke lot of the time the last few years, that's for sure.
And one thing that I haven't done is, and I used to watch the Starters so much, and they used to always crap on about the Raptors. I mean, that was their team, and I have not paid attention to them this season. And this would have been the season to really sort of be engrossed with the Starters, because they love that team so much.
Yeah, yeah. Like I agree that the Eastern Conference has been really refreshing to see these new teams kind of emerge from what the long shadow of LeBron since his departure to the West. I think it's fantastic to have this this conference that's really kind of becoming a force like Indiana's another team that's kind of didn't quite pull things together with injuries, but that's another team that's in the mix of those sort of the big four of like Milwaukee, Boston, Philly, and Toronto. You've got Indiana as well that's climbing up, and Brooklyn. So it's like you said, you got these teams in the West that kind of cast their own very long and large shadow, but the East is becoming a really exciting story with plenty of Aussies too, like Aussie stars, like Ben Simmons is potentially someone who could wear the crown, be the king of the East, that's for sure. It's within his grasp if he puts the work in and continues to grow as a player, that's for sure.
Oh, it's exciting stuff. Now I just want to stay up all night just watching highlight clips. And
yeah, well, I'll be watching the game tomorrow, that's for sure. I'm looking forward to that.
That's awesome, man. Well, but yeah, by the time people hear this, they'll know the results, and they can dig back in and see if any of those storylines became reality. But like for me, you know, over the years, like, you know, loving basketball, becoming obsessed with it was really like, you know, very similar to what you said, that sort of first love, something that you really sort of got into. And, you know, like you sort of, my path went in a different direction for a while, and you're sort of working yourself out. And I went into music for, well, I don't know, like a couple of decades and still heavily there. But, you know, in the last several years, I've sort of cast my eye back into basketball and started to go to NBL games. And earlier this year, I went and saw the Bottom Dwellers Knicks play one of the other near Bottom Dwellers, the Wolves, at Madison.
Wow, fantastic!
Which was really cool. It was just one of those moments where you get to see something like in a historic building, but also just to get to see some NBA action. And it was nostalgic, but it was also really exciting to see, oh wow, like this is why I liked it, and it's better than ever.
It's really cool. It's great when you get those moments of sort of that remind you of why you got in, because sometimes those things kind of get lost. You kind of go take your love of things for granted, and then you have those moments where it's like, yeah, this is why I love it. Yeah, that would be a terrific experience, because it says a lot about the NBA that with those sort of bottom teams, that even those games have that aura that draw people like you and myself and other fans in like a moth to a flame.
Oh, it insane. And like, you know, that was a near sellout. That was, you know, packed. Yeah. And you're just looking at the caliber of the teams compared to the rest of the league, and you just think, wow, imagine trying to get, you know, a ticket to something in the, you know, in the top four.
Yeah.
It's just incredible.
You need deep pockets, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Crazy. Yeah. Absolutely crazy. Well, man, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much. I honestly could talk to you about basketball for hours, and I held off for so long because I can't even talk now. I'm so tongue-tied with basketball. But I was actually truthfully really fascinated about journalism, because I love like just little pockets of different industries and how people work and everything. And I thought, I'm not going to jump into basketball because I don't want to come in too hard, too strong, too quickly.
Don't be shy.
And now I'm riled up and I'm ready to go. But I think at some stage down the track, we might catch up again, and maybe going into the next season. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of changes, as we spoke about, and lots of things happening. So I'd love to, if you got some time, we'll do another catch up.
Absolutely. There's plenty of drama ahead to sink our teeth into, that's for sure. So, yeah, I'm game if you're game.
Yep, done. I'm ready to go.
All right, fantastic.
Awesome, man. Well, take care and we'll speak soon.
Thanks so much. It was a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
To reach out to Oliver, you can search for Oliver on Twitter. You can go to twitter.com/OliverK20, the number 2020, or just search for Oliver K, that's K-A-Y for his surname. I'll have links to some of his articles, some of his pieces that he's written, he's such a cool guy. So make sure you reach out to him if you enjoyed it, or there's anything more that you would like to learn from him and his world of sports journalism. I'm sure there's a few of you out there that are keen writers. And I think there's a few of you that listen to the podcast that work in the media and work in sort of a reporting sort of function and journalism. So who knows, maybe there's something there to dig in deeper with Oliver. So make sure you reach out to him and let him know what you thought of the podcast as well. Now, a few updates before we wrap it up. Now, I can't remember what date this episode's going to come out. I reckon it might be, when's it going to be? It's going to be, oh shit, is it? Is it? Is it going to be, is this the 1st of August? Is this the 1st of August? If this is the 1st of August, like, happy freaking release day. Oh, I can't even talk. I'm overwhelmed. Happy freaking release day to us. Because Lorde's new album, Fallen Idols, has come out today. The 1st of August, we are here. So if you're listening to this Thursday night, the night that this album, I can't even talk. The day that this episode comes out, you're listening to it on the 1st of August, we're here. So you should be able to go on Spotify, on Apple Music. You can go to our Bandcamp page. You can purchase the album. You can stream it. Whatever it is, go and check it out. Go and give it a go. No, sorry, that sounded really demanding, but I'm really passionate here. Go and check it out. Go and grab it. Like, go and listen to it. Share this stuff around. If you've already got the album and you're loving it, pass individual songs around to other people. If you know anybody that loves heavy music in general, find the song on the album that they might like. You don't have to give them the whole album. Don't overwhelm them. Spread the word. Get it out there. I would love to see you guys passing it around and sharing it to more and more people. The big goal that we've got for this album is just to try and get it to as many people as possible. We want people to hear this album. They can make a decision whether they like it or not after the fact, but we just want people to have the opportunity to actually hear some of these songs, and then make a decision after that. So for us, getting that reach, getting that exposure is the big thing for us. So please, if you know anybody out there that loves a little bit of metal, pass them any of the tracks. It could be the title track, Fallen Idols. it could be Kill or Be Killed, which is going to be, well, it should be a Spotify playlist highlighted song. So that should already be in curated playlists around the Spotify traps. So you could pass that one around, very old school Judas Priest style, full on in your face heavy metal song. It could be the ballad, the power ballad, Counting Down the Hours. It could be some of the more extreme stuff on the album, like The Edge of the World or United. It could be some of the stuff that sounds a little bit like Through the Fire, a bit of old school Megadeth feel, Wilder Than the Wind. It could be some of the more epic stuff like Chaos Reigning or Immortal or Master of Darkness. There's heaps of stuff on this album. There's so much stuff. Lots of great little elements of different subgenres of metal and bits of rock in there, and we blended it all together. It's a cohesive, flowing album of Lord. It's us, and it's out today. I can't believe it. So my assumption, because I'm recording some of these in advance, is that pre-orders are now closed because, well, there's nothing to pre-order. The album's there now. So you should be able to go to lord.net.au/FI still, hopefully, or go to lord.net.au/fallenidols, and you should be able to buy the CD. Now, I'm pretty sure that the first pressing is now sold out. So the one with the three bonus tracks, that's gone. There might be a couple of copies left, so you might want to double check, but I'm pretty sure it's gone. So the standard version of the album will be available on CD, so you can get that. We can sign it for you if you want. And any other leftover items from the pre-order campaign, if there's any back patches, any smaller patches, t-shirts, anything like that will be available on the online store. So you can do that. You can buy the album directly from Bandcamp as well, in high quality FLAC audio. And obviously our whole back catalog and other merchandise is over there as well. But, for us, just pass it around, talk about it, get it on social media, Insta stories, Facebook stories, tag us in there, share it around, talk about it. If you can leave a review anywhere on the internet, that'd be absolutely fantastic. Let's get these algorithms pumping. Sharing, commenting on YouTube videos, Facebook videos, sharing all the media that we've been putting out there, just anything to help us build this sucker, because this is crunch time now. The pre-order campaign was easily the most successful thing that we've done from Lord and Dungeon perspective. The take-up has been incredible. We sold more. This is how backwards it is. We have sold more CDs in a pre-order campaign than ever before. This is in a market where there's a dying format, like where buying habits have changed. People aren't buying music anymore compared to what they used to. Streaming's obviously a big thing, which we've completely embraced, but we still produce CDs and people are buying them. So I'm blown away, absolutely blown away. So we are going from strength to strength, and we're looking for you guys to continue to push us now into crunch time, into the release phase. I've just got to stop talking, but go and check it all out. Fallen Idols is the brand new album. Please let me know what you think. I would love to get all of your feedback, constructive criticism as well. Just bring it all on. I'd love to see you guys talking about it. Okay, enough of that. Now, Self-Starter. I didn't have to take a breather there. Self-Starter, we're in the midst of season 2. We're several episodes in, so go and check all that out over at selfstarter.com.au. If you know somebody that is already in the self-employment world and maybe needs a little bit of reassurance or a bit of inspiration just to keep them moving, or you know somebody who hasn't quite started yet, maybe a little bit too scared to get started, go and pass Self-Starter on to them. Go to selfstarter.com.au, or you can share any of the episodes via Spotify or Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Stitcher or whatever it is. It's everywhere, so you can share all the episodes around. I cover heaps of different industries, hospitality and retail and the music industry and education and lots of things. I'm trying to make it as varied as possible, and there's lots of really, really cool stories. So even if it's an industry that has no appeal to you whatsoever and you couldn't possibly think of any possible reason why it would be interesting to you, have a listen anyway, because there's a lot of parallels, a lot of best practices there. And the best way to succeed and to get better is to learn from others in other industries or in other groups. Grab outside ideas and bring them into your world, and that will be a point of difference. So anyway, that's my little soapbox moment. So go and listen to the episodes, share them around. If you know anybody out there that's not familiar with Self-Starter but should probably listen to it, pass it around. And season 2 will run up until the end of December. They're fortnightly episodes that come out every Monday, every fortnight, but Monday mornings at 5 a.m. And loving the support. So thank you so much for everybody that's been supporting. Almost at the end, folks. Podcast video series, Getting Into Podcasts. You can search for that on YouTube or Facebook. Just search for me on YouTube, my YouTube channel, or you can search for the Antisocial Podcast on Facebook and you'd be able to click on the video section. And there are 11 videos, bite-sized videos, about two and a half minutes each. And they talk about the basics when it comes to podcasting, everything that you should consider, put together, think about, plan in advance. And it's very, very simple stuff, very basic. You might be beyond this point, especially if you're into podcasting already, but it's a great way to get you started and just try and give you some clarity as far as what you need to do to get a podcast up and running. But please, if you've got an idea to start a podcast, you want to do it, please get into it. I'll help you. Message me, get me your ideas. If there's anything you're stuck on, I'm happy to help. I want as many of you to have podcasts as possible. I have great plans. I'm really, really looking forward to helping more and more people start their own shows and for whatever reason, to entertain, to educate, to say dumb shit, to say smart shit, whatever it is, I don't care. Like, I just want people to have their podcasts out there and to share more information, more ideas, and more expression, people that express themselves in one of the best formats out there. Podcasting for me has been life-changing. It's a game changer, and I want more people to feel that, and I want more people to get out there and do their own thing. So go and check it all out, and also sign up for the mailing list over at andydowling.net or andysocial.net. You'll get a PDF download of almost 20 pages with all detailed notes from that podcast video series, plus additional stuff on Self-Starter, Andysocial, and Lord. It's a great little introduction piece to me and also the world of podcasting as well. So you can sign up. You'll get a free PDF download straight away. And I'll begin to start sending out monthly little mailing list updates about my world and everything going on. And I'll try to do little giveaways, exclusive offers, lots of things just to make it interesting, something interesting to penetrate your inbox. Ooh, okay. I think that's time to wrap it up. Anyway, enough of me. Lots of episodes to come in the coming weeks, as always, every week, every Thursday, 8 p.m. on the dot, or more or less. There'll be a new episode out. I've got some really good ones coming up, so stay tuned for them. But until next week, folks, take care and ta-ta. Larry, please.